Welcome, everyone. This is The LaRouche Show for Saturday, August 18, 2012. My name is Marcia Mary Baker. Our topic for today is Get Rid of Obama and Look at What We Can Do. Now, we have three members of our panel to discuss this today, and I will introduce them in just a minute. But first, I want to point out that the science station now on Mars, named Curiosity, is already engaging in actual activity, not just set up. I understand that today is to be the first firing of laser probes at a nearby rock. And sometime, this is after only not even 2 weeks have passed after the superb landing on Mars by Curiosity and then all the flawless setup that's taken place. And then in the next week, we understand that the plan is for Curiosity to start rolling, heading towards a designated target and do some more activity. So the reason I mention this is it's a success for mankind, not just in the mechanistic, which is fair enough measurement, but for who we are as human beings. So I'm starting with this update because really we're functionally in a new domain for humanity in the universe. It doesn't mean we don't have dangers. That's the point. We remain here on planet Earth with an insane drive from certain interests we've called imperial interests, the neo-British Empire, to play games and using especially the presidency of the United States occupied by Obama to be instigating a potential thermonuclear war in Syria, instigating that Israel should attack Iran, this kind of thing, you know, we've been discussing. Many people now listening know a great deal about that. But our vantage point today is in terms of the universe at large and how, with the right guts and will, we can vanquish once and for all this war threat. And it's part of the same process of what we see, the great potential that we're reminded of with the success of Curiosity on Mars. So I want to, I'm very glad to welcome from the LaRouche Political Action Committee from the R&D Basement team, Ben Denniston. Hi, Ben.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, and people will know Ben from since Curiosity landed on Mars in the two Wednesday weekly reports that are done, the video reports. Ben has participated in that and will have a lot to say, but also the latest EIR, that's EIR Online dated August 17, has an article in the feature of many articles on Curiosity on Mars by Ben on the strategic defense of the Earth proposal of Russia and at large. But I also welcome two others that are that have been following very much and very involved in the international effort for collaboration among nations for scientific endeavor. I have here live in the studio with me Bill Jones. Welcome, Bill.
Who's Marcia.
Our Washington correspondent, right?
Yes, indeed.
I mention at large because I know that takes you around the world. But in Stockholm in Scandinavia, from one of the Arctic nations, the United States is one too, we know, but from Sweden, I'm glad to welcome Ulf Sandmark. Welcome, Ulf.
Hello, hello, Marcia.
And just to reiterate that we're at a certain historic point where we can move ahead to unbelievable success, as shown by Curiosity on Mars. But I know in the last 48 or longer hours, Mr. LaRouche has made a comparison to where we were at another historic point. I remember it well. I give my age. That was 29 years ago when we had a proposal then, the Strategic Defense Initiative by President Reagan in March 1983, that Mr. LaRouche had been very much had been involved in pushing for, promoting, and formulating for years. And scientists like Dr. Edward Teller, who had been known as the father of the H-bomb, said, look what we should be able to do, have nations collaborate in the common aims of mankind. He used that expression. He spoke of that in 1982. Again, he was involved in a conference in Sicily in Italy in 1983. I think it was in August, and a group of scientists did get together, including Russia, despite the Cold War, to commit to working on this. But then through the decades, this was thwarted. We wouldn't be here today if it was successfully thwarted. But here we are today with in a successor moment where this is you could call it do or die. And Ben, I'd like you to, you've been conferencing with Mr. LaRouche and your associates. I'd like you to begin by discussing where we stand.
Sure. I mean, I think it's worth, you know, as you said, looking at the current situation, I mean, it's been over the months, it's becoming clearer and clearer that there's really two clear options for the whole planet right now, two directions we could go. And that's come even more clearly into focus just over the last weeks with this Curiosity landing and what that really signifies. I mean, one of the things I know we've highlighted in the coverage of it is that it was led up by the United States, but there was a fair amount of international collaboration on it. I mean, Russia contributed one of the main scientific instruments. A number of other nations throughout Europe had all contributed different elements to the rover itself, the process of getting it to Mars. So it really is an expression of what mankind really can accomplish. And this is something we had a discussion with Mr. LaRouche earlier today, and he was really emphasizing this point that we have to take home what this really expresses. It expresses, you know, something that goes to the heart of Mr. LaRouche's, all of his work, the work of building this organization, what we're doing, the core of his work in economics, science of economics, is really demonstrating the qualitative transcendental difference between mankind, what mankind is as a force in the universe, as compared to just any other, say, animal species, that we have a unique creative capability as a human species, and that is typified by what we did with this Mars rover, where we can actually extend the powers of the human mind to other bodies in the solar system. We can actually, he had this interesting formulation. He said, you know, it's been fallacious that people have been thinking about mankind on Earth observing Mars. What we have now with this new, very sophisticated, very high-tech, you know, it's not even just a rover, it's a scientific laboratory. It's a whole very advanced scientific laboratory on wheels on Mars. So now we're on Mars looking back at the Earth and looking out at the rest of the solar system. And he says that's how we have to begin to understand this. This should be a, you know, the beginning of what you might say a scientific cultural revolution for mankind, and actually getting the sense that what defines mankind is not his biological sense perceptions or just his biological existence as just, say, an animal, but what defines mankind is this unique creative scientific capability. So he's really highlighted the fundamental significance for all mankind that is expressed by this landing. But at the same time, you know, he's doing that in the context of the very real reality that we are now facing, which is, like you opened with, Marcia, the potential for, you know, full thermonuclear war, where we have this insane president in the White House, this Hitler in the White House, Barack Obama, who has been trying to continue this policy of military aggression that we saw with Libya, a completely unconstitutional war where we just devastated an entire nation, presided over the assassination of a head of state, all without any congressional authorization, which is the basis for declaring war, according to the U.S. Constitution. Threw that out the window, ran a total regime change operation in Libya, and then had the intention to continue that policy into Syria, into Iran, and right up onto the borders, the strategic borders of Russia, and then further on against China to try and back down these powerful nations and in the face of U.S. Military aggression, but U.S. military aggression being controlled by Wall Street and really London, the heart of this dying financial empire. So what he was referring to earlier today is he was really juxtaposing the two paths, the two choices that humanity has right now. We're we are seeing the total collapse of this financial imperial system, and that's every day becoming more clear with the breakup of Europe and the European system and the crisis over there with the euro. And at the same time, the people who are trying to defend and support that system have been, you know, controlling Obama, pushing for this war policy as a way to try and keep control over the world. Now we're at the point where that effort has been stalled enough that we are now beginning to see the potential emergence for a new option for mankind. The point has been made that if we go down that route, if we continue to go down that route of imperial war and attempt for imperial domination and oligarchical domination of nations through this current financial system and through the current Wall Street and London-centered oligarchy, Russia and China have made very clear that they're not going to back down, and they'll go to full thermonuclear confrontation if necessary, if the United States, under this lunatic Obama, continues with this war policy. So now we come to the point, just to situate it, where that's on the table. That's been on the table for months. That's still on the table. You know, just the other night, Mr. LaRouche was saying that we're sitting still on a knife's edge, on a razor's edge, for full global conflict like humanity has never seen before, full thermonuclear conflict. That still is right there. But at the same time, people looking at that situation and saying, well, there's got to be another way to go. There's got to be another direction for mankind. And in that context, you know, we've been leading that alternate orientation for the world. And in that context, Mr. LaRouche really grabbed onto the significance of this Curiosity landing, this landing of this laboratory on Mars, because he's saying this is an expression, the best and most pure expression of what mankind is capable of, and not even just from the standpoint of pure science, which we want pure, we want science, we want to expand the powers of mind, but it also has very serious and very real implications for the issues of, say, defending the Earth, defending the human species. Because one thing that we've done a lot of work on in the basement scientific work here with LaRouche Pack is really illustrating the history of life and trying to present to people, people are living, most people in society today kind of live just from their day-to-day experience. They think about their life as beginning when they're born, ending when they die. I mean, the culture's degenerated so much that most people have a very short conception about their own existence in historical terms, very short and narrow view. And we've been doing a lot of work to try and we need to get to the point to expand the population's conception and really take even these large questions of saying, you know, look at the history of life. Look at the history of life on this planet. If you just look at the record, what you see is that species after species, thousands of species, have been rendered completely extinct for various reasons, a number of them being reasons relating to the solar system and the galaxy. That, you know, life is not just, we're not just isolated on some body floating through empty space. The Earth is constantly being affected and influenced by all types of cosmic events, so-called. And if we're going to actually rise to meet that challenge, a challenge that's already demonstrated itself to life, to be the challenge to any form of life on this planet. It's already been very well demonstrated that that's already an existing challenge, that if any species is going to try and continue to exist on this planet, that challenge is going to have to be overcome. The human species is the only species that's demonstrated a capability to do that. So the question now is, will we choose to do that? And the most immediate option, the most immediate issue on the table in that respect is this issue we've been taking up more and more recently, which is the issue of asteroid and comet impacts, which is actually much more of a frequent and serious threat than most people probably realize, because, you know, most people haven't personally experienced the effects of this. But it actually is something that does happen rather frequently and is something that mankind is going to address, to take up as a challenge. We need to find these bodies. We need to observe them, see where they are. We need to track them to see which ones might hit the Earth, which ones are not a threat. And the ones that might be a threat, we got to make sure we're prepared to go out and deal with these things, whether it be slowly altering the orbit of a potentially threatening asteroid, or whether it be blowing it up if necessary, or whatever the necessary actions are going to be. But this is now being put on the table. It's been put on the table by the Russians recently, actually in specifically in the context of this war policy. The exact same Russian officials that have drawn the hardest line against the U.S. military aggression, people like Dmitry Rogozin, I think he's currently the deputy prime minister of Russia, he has stated very clearly, one, he's made very open, clear statements against the expansion of U.S. and NATO missile defense systems into Eastern Europe, moving closer to Russia's borders. He's made very clear statements that Russia will react militarily if necessary and take the necessary actions and strikes to defend Russia from this aggression. And at the same time, that he's taken this very hard line, him being one of a number of people of top levels in the Russian government, at the same time as taking a very hard line against this military aggression policy we've seen under Obama, this truly imperial policy, at the same time, he's also said we should abandon this military conflict. We should abandon this Cold War-like race and tensions and combating team who can get the upper hand over the other nation. We should abandon that orientation. We should actually be uniting the most powerful nations of the world to focus on issues that actually do threaten all of mankind, issues that are not just being created by stupid acts of aggression or imperial actions, but we should be focusing on issues like asteroid defense, that the United States and Russia should engage in cooperative agreement to begin to deal with this threat of the defense of the Earth. And this was back in late 2011 that this began to be put on the table by the Russians. And we've been doing a lot of work looking at this issue, and just from my research, again, I was surprised at how frequent of an issue this actually is. It is actually something that we should not be wasting our time in delaying to build the defenses and make sure we're ready to defend ourselves from these objects when they do come into place. But just to kind of open, just to put that on the table to get a sense of some of the work we're looking at, that's an indication of the two options right now we have. A lot of people are recognizing that the current paradigm is completely disintegrating. You see it in the economic collapse. You see it in the military policy, which is driven by the economic collapse. And what we see opening up in opposition to that path to just chaos and war, is this potential for cooperation among the most powerful nations in the world. And LaRouche keeps pointing to the United States, Russia, and China as a nation that should first come together as the power block, and then we can bring other nations in, all kinds of other nations in on that power block, but engage in basically a new global orientation. And it'll be a global orientation focused around defense of Earth, defense against real threats that are not just man-made threats from an oligarchy, from unnecessary threats from a military policy, but focus on real threats that actually do threaten the existence of the human species. And the point of all this would be that this would necessitate a real science driver approach. We'd be forced to actually engage in making new scientific breakthroughs, new scientific discoveries, completely expanding our space capability, expanding mankind's presence in space in order to deal with this situation. And you know, I think we can get into some of the implications of that a little bit further, a little bit later. But just to kind of open up and put that on the table, you know, that's what LaRouche has really been stressing more and more the recent weeks, is that we have what we're looking at is a potential opportunity for a complete new direction in global relations, where international relations are defined by cooperation in the name of the betterment of mankind, in the defense of mankind, but that means the advance of mankind. That means a scientific and technological advance. So just to open, I think it's worth putting that picture on the table, because that's where we're sitting right now, in the context of this election, and that is the backdrop for the need to throw this Nazi out of the White House, this Nazi Obama out of the White House before this election, before the Democratic Convention, and get, I mean, any number of political figures in the United States would be eminently more qualified than Obama to lead the United States to at least be in this position of leadership in this current situation, which I'm just describing here, where we can enter in this type of forward motion, science-driven cooperation between nations like the United States, Russia, and China. And so just to kind of put that out there, that's what we're in the middle of right now, and it's a very exciting situation to be in because, you know, we are in the middle of it trying to make this shift happen.
Thank you, really, for that overview. That's terrific. And I wanted to turn to ask Bill to recap something in just a moment, but just to take up with your final words there, people should know, many people listening to this in the United States have been very actively beating the drum that to give orders to what Congress should do, pass Glass-Steagall reinstatement for a new nation and world-serving, science-serving credit system, go with major projects naturally, including space and including continental projects like the North American Water and Power Lines. But in any case, it's a guts question. And 2 weeks from now is the Democratic Party convention. The Republican convention is taking place. And we should take none of, we should not be any way fatalistic about anything. You know that most of Congress, such as they are, supports Glass-Steagall, but they haven't had the guts. Now, many of them are out and around the country. Don't let up is what I'm saying to our own listeners. Keep beating on this. Keep engaging. And I'm just pointing out that the what the LaRouche Political Action Committee put out 10 days ago, which is a platform for a new presidency, getting Obama aside and getting a person in, not a robot for the City of London. This platform that's put out called the Full Recovery Program for the United States, go with that like crazy. And you'll see on page 27, I'm making a plug here for it, you have a different view of the world. There's a map of the Arctic-centered world. And it you look down from the North Pole, and even without looking down from Mars, Ben, you see a different view of how we ought to be. We can create the viewpoint we have about our planet, about the solar system, and that's what we see in this Curiosity landing on Mars. And Bill, if you recap, Ben touched on this, but you've been following. I mean, Russia, speaking of potential collaboration, there have been many things, many areas specifically, the Arctic, the moon, and so that have been proposed despite Russia and China saying we're not going to tolerate any military encroachment upon us.
Mm-hmm. Look, let me just emphasize one of the things that Ben said about Obama, that the situation, the relationship between the United States and Russia and between the United States and China has never been worse than it is today because of the actions of the Obama administration. You talk with Russian diplomats today, and they will tell you this is one of the worst times to be a diplomat in Washington for a Russian diplomat. The Chinese also have been, you know, totally freaked out by the Obama administration's so-called pivot, the aggressive attitude that's being conducted within the Pacific, which is creating not only tension between China and the United States, but is creating greater tension between China and all the other countries in the Pacific region who are being pushed by this pivot to take a much more aggressive attitude towards China. So it is a very dangerous situation. I mean, the Middle East, what's going on there, the statements by the Israelis, it's really on the brink of war. But the situation is dangerous in every part of the world because of what the Obama administration has been doing. And as long as he is at the helm, we're looking at a very, very tough time ahead. We're looking at possible wars and devastation as a result of the lack of leadership of the United States which is absolutely required in this situation. Now, the other countries are not standing still. They're doing the things that they feel is in their national interest, both in terms of space. You have the Chinese lunar program. The Russians are doing things. They have serious problems that they have to deal with now because of the failures that they've had, largely due to obsolescent technology, some internal problems, but I think they will get that back on track. They're moving at any rate in that direction. And they're also doing what they feel is necessary economically. And there, aside from space, it is the Arctic development which is in the center of the Putin program. Now, everybody today, because of the warmer temperatures in the Arctic, because of the fact that they found new oil and gas resources in the Arctic region, everybody is now looking at the Arctic and wanting to do something. Russia has always been there. Russia has been in the Arctic since the old Muscovy was founded in the 1500s. Their scientific development has always been connected to the exploration of Siberia and of the Arctic. You look at people like Lomonosov, Mendeleev, Vernadsky. This is where people went. This was their frontier, their new frontier. Still remains that to this very day. And so that they know more about it than any other country of the world. 40% of the population of the Arctic lives in the Russian Arctic. It represents only about 2% of total GDP, which is created in the Arctic, but a tremendous amount of their export product is also based in here. And Putin's policy has been, and he's very personally on top of this thing, to develop the Russian economy by orienting it towards creating the infrastructure and the and bring in the populations in this Arctic region in order to develop as a modern era for tomorrow. Because of the warming now, you have this space in the Arctic oceans, in the Arctic region oceans, within the bounds of Russia, which are now navigable for a greater part of the year. It is their intention to make that into what they call the Arctic Mediterranean. It's about 2,500 miles. If you would travel from Europe to the Pacific, from the Atlantic to the Pacific using this route, it would be 40%, 40% less distance than going any other way. The first Chinese icebreaker just went through it and landed in Iceland in Reykjavik this week. Took them 10 days to get through that. And the commander of this icebreaker said, I was just totally astounded at how easy it was to get through. The Russians are aware of the implications of this thing, similar to what they did at the beginning of the 19th century, create a railroad through the landmass of Russia to service all the economies of Western Europe, bring them to Asia and bring Asian goods to Europe. This would be the way that Russia is going to thrive and to prosper. Now what they call the Northern Sea Route is going to be similar to that. A tremendous development is going to go on. You're going to have the icebreakers. They have an icebreaker fleet. They're going to go into the fourth generation of icebreakers they're starting to create now. They'll have to build railroads from the north down through Siberia, north-south railroads, utilizing also the river traffic, rivers running north and south, down to the Trans-Siberian and to the what they call the BAM, the second Trans-Siberian railroad, to bring the goods from the north and to bring things up to the people living up in the north. They're going to create scientific centers. This is a place. It's like almost like going to Mars in one sense, because the climate has been so difficult. It's been very difficult to really investigate it fully in terms of geology, in terms of hydrology, in terms also of things like the ionosphere. The North is a very specific environment as far as magnetic fields are concerned. We don't know a lot about that because we haven't had a lot of activity there. But as we bring people up there, and as the Russians are doing to set up scientific centers up there, we're going to learn a lot more about this universe than we have known up until now. And with regard to the space program, You got to remember that people who wanted to set up colonies on Mars or on the moon, they're going to Antarctica. Why? Because there's ice up there? No, because it's as desolate and difficult as building things, building habitations for man on a different planet. So in the reverse, you can look at this in the same way. Conquering the Arctic in this sense and making it habitable for man there will also give the capabilities that we need to do the same kind of thing on the moon or possibly on Mars. So that's what's the orientation. Now if the United States were involved in this, and they should, the Chinese and Russians cooperate on many of this stuff, these things. But if the United States were involved in this, then the technological potential of the U.S., which is in many respects far greater in many fields than either of the other two countries, would accelerate this type of development in such a way that we could do some of the things that Ben was talking about. Also, in terms of the Arctic, they're going to have a new satellite system called the Arctica, which will be investigating everything on land and also in the ionosphere in that region in order to get a better picture of what the substance of the area is. They'll be looking at the ice flows, looking at water, but also at looking at things in the ionosphere. So it's another location where we would have the capability of doing the type of things that Ben was talking about in terms of the defense of the Earth.
Right. Well, one thing is, let me turn to Ulf here in Stockholm, Ulf Sandmark, because Bill and Ben, you were saying the same thing. What we're confronted with is the concept of breaking any sense of restrictions, going to where the maximum challenge is and going for it. And Ulf, you've been you wrote an article. I want to refer people to it in EIR Online. Just go to it's in April 6th EIR Online, and it's a presentation you made in February in Germany called "Man in the Arctic, But How?" In other words, yes, we're in the Arctic, but there's like a dual domain. You can do it just for a reductionist reason, or you can do it for the maximum reasons that's just have been laid out. Do you want to speak about that, especially since a lot of the people in Scandinavia, I'd like to hear your reaction about the Curiosity landing on Mars.
Well, people are very excited also here about the Curiosity. It's everywhere, and every picture is now, every day almost, there's a picture from a postcard from Mars. So that's, of course, very big. But I just want to comment a little bit the what Bill said here about Russia. What's so astounding about their development is that they're putting the Russian Academy of Science so much into the center of their activity. So it's a really scientific-driven policy. And also they are more than expected pushing forward the development of the labor and to really even have in the program to take care about the alcohol and problems and the depressions people have in those areas, which is really a big problem because especially the original peoples there are put to alcohol a lot and that's something we have to really recruit them into the science and to the excitement of development. But maybe you also saw that, Bill, in the reports about the Russian Academy.
Yes,
I did. In the center.
Yes.
Yeah.
In other words, the cultural, you're talking about the whole cultural shift that's involved in doing this.
There are two things. There are two universities up there. And this, again, was Putin's idea 2 years ago. There's a university in Yakutsk on the east, on the far eastern part, and there is a university in Arkhangelsk on the western part. And what Putin did 2 years ago, there were two schools up there. One was called the Technical University, and the other one was Pomir University. They put them together as what they called, it was the highest form of university in Russia. It's a federal university. And it was concentrating on the kind of topics that are important for the Arctic, where you could, you know, use the Arctic to find out things about hydrology, chemistry, also the space, magnetic fields. These were going to be concentrated in these universities, and in order to utilize the area in a maximum way of increasing the science of Russia as a whole. They just finished now what they called a floating university. That was 40 of the students from, I believe, all of them from the Federal University in Arkhangelsk, but maybe from other places as well, went on a trip up to Novaya Zemlya and some of the other places up in the north, collecting specimens, making analyses and things like this. It really is an emphasis on the science and technology in order to make it into the forefront of development for the entire country. So, I mean, oil and gas is there as a reason to be there. But believe me, the brunt of this is going to be, as Ulf said, on the science and technology. And a branch of the Russian Academy of Sciences has been established in the Arkhangelsk Northern Federal University.
Yeah, and also the conferences are held in the Russian Geographical Society as the host for the conferences where Putin makes his speeches. So it's really a scientific center of this operation, which is really the old Russian tradition, the really good old Russian tradition that is coming out there. Actually, there is something called the Arctic University, which is a cooperation with the universities in the northern hemisphere on Arctic questions. So there are in all countries, also in the U.S., in Canada, in Sweden, and Norway, in Finland, everywhere there are parts that are taking part in this international cooperation. And this is something that is really going on very strongly, and this is really the significance of Arctic, is that there is a space that is open for cooperation right there between the different superpowers that are almost on the throats in other parts of the world. So this is the real possibility to establish the cooperation. And now when Russia is really pushing it forward so much, there is a real interest coming up from other parts of the world too. And especially here in Scandinavia, the ones who are driving this thing in Scandinavia are the Norwegians. They had put forward as their priority the Arctic development in the Norwegian government when they came in 2005, and they are into the second plan now for the development of Arctic, and they are really cooperating with Russia, establishing the first border agreement in the region that cleared an old problem after 40 years of negotiations. So the Norwegians are really pushing this, and then Sweden is now the head of the Arctic Council and are kind of coming into it with a special group in the foreign ministry. But what's interesting is that also the U.S. ambassador to Stockholm, Mark Brzezinski, had an op-ed in Svenska Dagbladet August 6th, and there he came out very, very open for cooperation around Arctic. Arctic, our common interest, is the headline, and then he said this is something we really have to work with. And this means cooperation with Russia. And he puts forward the Arctic Council as the center for this cooperation. And he says in May 2015, the United States will take over the chairmanship of the Arctic Council. We are We are dedicated to work to make this council the main forum for Arctic diplomacy, as well with the direct members and also the non-Arctic states. So actually it is a real window of cooperation that is also pushed by some forces in the U.S., especially this ambassador.
Shows you the necessity of getting rid of Obama. Everybody now seems to, and the Russians, everybody is working together on this. There is an era of I would say, an era of good feeling between among most of the nations of the world on developing this thing jointly. And the United States, in spite of the fact, I guess, that the American ambassador is for, the Obama administration is nowhere to be found, or they are somewhere to be found, trying to undermine this thing at every step of the way. And every move that the Russians make, you'll see the usual comments from the American ambassador in Moscow, who has not come out in support of this, and from the administration and people like Susan Rice to try and cut Russia down, to try and cut them out of the loop on this. So that's the problem we face. I mean, this could really go forward if the United States were fully in it. But as long as this character is sitting in the White House, it ain't going to happen.
Yes. Go ahead, Olaf. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just one thing there. And the interesting thing is that with all this academic cooperation, there is actually a field of initiative that could be taken by many, many forces outside the government that could really push forward this development. So there is lots of opportunities. And then, of course, there are a lot of business opportunities coming up now with these enormous new Russian fields that are opening. And also now Norway and Greenland have invited business to come and join them in the development, because it's really huge and it's too big for these two countries. It's Greenland, Denmark, and Norway. So it's really an open field for people to make initiatives into this cooperation. And you're right there, cooperating with Russia, with the United States, with Canada, with also China and South Korea are coming on board in this development.
Yes, I think institutionally in the United States military, where we've seen the Chief of Staff, General Dempsey, we've seen others put the brakes on behalf of humanity, the war drive that's coming out of the Obama administration and the Tony Blair London orientation. But the U.S. European Command is hosting a conference on Arctic security in a few weeks in where? Norway. So you see these institutional kind of networks that you're just describing, Bill and Ulf. Ben, do you want to say anything about what's been raised, too, about the scientific issues in the sense of electromagnetism patterns and other things that were even precursors on earthquakes and so forth that you would get out of the polar and Arctic studies?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's just that could be a whole nother five shows. I mean, that's just a fascinating subject. You know, as Bill mentioned, it's kind of like with the polar regions, you do get a singularity environment in terms of the Earth's interaction with all types of cosmic radiation. The sunlight, the electromagnetic radiation, the visible light, infrared, UV light that comes in from the sun intersects the polar region in a very different way than it does anywhere else. But then also, again, as was mentioned, the magnetic pole is there. And so you get a very unique formation of the magnetic field there. And people, you know, the most well-known association of that phenomena is with the Aurora Borealis, where you get this Northern Lights phenomenon, this beautiful display of charged particles, plasma glowing up in the sky because of the intense energy coming in from the cosmic radiation. You see it when you see the auroras, but the point is that's always going on. And I mean, just to put it in the broadest terms, this opens up a whole area of the question of the interaction of the Earth, the entire Earth systems, the atmosphere, the ionosphere, the magnetosphere, the magnetic field. how all these systems of the Earth, you know, which we should note, life is intimately connected with. You know, Vernadsky was mentioned. You take Vernadsky's work and looking at what life did to actually not just depend upon these systems, but create these systems and change these systems. And the atmosphere has been defined by life that affects the ionosphere, the structure of the ionosphere, all these things. You know, life's been shaping the planet, but it's been doing it in a way, in a constant kind of interplay and interaction with various forms of influences coming from the cosmos, coming from the sun, coming from the galaxy. You have galactic cosmic radiation coming in constantly. So all these, so the Earth, you know, what we experience here, you know, again, the curiosity becomes a perfect flag to kind of raise for people for where mankind should go. People are stuck so much in their daily lives and their daily existence that humanity needs to take a step back, a big step back, you know, a mental step back, say all the way to Mars. Put yourself mentally on Mars. We're not living on just some isolated body. Again, the environment we're living in is purely the generation of the intersection of the activity of life interacting with the cosmos. And again, this is something that Vernadsky, you know, dedicated a whole series of articles on, looking at the influence of cosmic radiation, even back at the time when he was alive in the 20s and 30s and into the 40s, looking at the question of the effect of cosmic radiation and influencing the biosphere, affecting the biosphere, affecting life. And the point is, a lot of these are frankly frontier areas of investigation. There's all types of open questions about how exactly life interacts with these various cosmic radiation forms and how these influence weather on Earth, influence the climate, influence the electromagnetic conditions on the Earth, and how this plays into life's existence. So it is certainly a fascinating area for a whole number of reasons, including the scientific development and the real science driver aspect of it, of developing this region, which, you know, LaRouche has made the point, will take a very high level of energy density per capita to support people up in this region. And it's exactly the type of direction that mankind needs to go. We should be continuing, you know, the last 40 years of green technology, of reducing energy consumption, reducing the consumption per capita of this environmental insanity is fundamentally against human progress. It's fundamentally against the very nature of the history of development of life itself. For life to exist, for mankind to exist, you look at the record of life, it's always been a process of increasing energy consumption, increasing energy density. You know, LaRouche's concept of energy flux density. Life itself has shown its own expression over the evolutionary record of increasing its energy flux density, increasing the consumption rate, increasing the expanse and the power and the activity of life. Mankind's continued existence also depends upon a continuous rate of progress, and that's been halted with this whole green environmental doctrine, in which we've documented in detail, goes to the heart of this oligarchical imperial doctrine centered out of London, centered around of circles relating to the British royal family, you know, Prince Philip, his role in the World Wildlife Fund, Prince Bernhard, his role in the World Wildlife Fund and the Bilderberger Group and this cartel control imperial apparatus, who is focused on population reduction. So the point is that whole paradigm is also part of what is what's brought us to this current point of crisis. So everything that was discussed in terms of developing the Arctic, that typifies just as much the direction that mankind needs to go in developing the Arctic, because it's going to require this vast new resources up there that we'll have access to, but it's going to require a fundamental drive in the capital intensity, the production per capita, the energy consumption per capita to sustain life and to sustain advanced developing life, to sustain universities, to sustain scientific institutions, to sustain even mining and resource development up in the Arctic. It's going to require fundamental increases in the energy usage and in the density of activity. And that's a good thing. We need to drive that forward because that's going to force new technological breakthroughs. And so this is definitely a frontier on all these fronts. And you know, I think it's worth, again, just highlighting, because all this then goes to what LaRouche was discussing with some of us earlier today, which is the real fundamental question of the evolution of the human species. You know, the concept that goes to the heart of his work in economics, his heart in the heart of his work in science of physical economy, is what is it that makes mankind unique? What makes mankind a unique creature, a creative creature in the universe? It's been clearly demonstrated that there's a qualitative distinction between mankind and any other form of just basic animal life. And, you know, LaRouche has dedicated his work to trying to identify with higher and higher precision what is that unique principle that mankind has, this creative principle that mankind has, that gives mankind this power to continually expand and improve its conditions and control over the universe in a way that no animal species can. And a lot of what he's been focused on in that question is, for example, this question of sense perception. That, unfortunately, most people in society are still tied to their biological sense perceptions. People live their identities their identities are tied to their sense perceptual existence. They think about their life. They think about from the point they live to the point they die. And that for so many people in society and for the culture generally today, that becomes people's reference point for making decisions, for living out their life is based upon, you know, acquiring pleasure, avoiding pain, getting along, having a comfortable life, and then when it's over, it's just over. You know, and what LaRouche has demonstrated and where he says mankind needs to go is the culture as a whole has to rise to the point where people have a truly scientific conception of what really makes the human species unique as the human species. And it's not biological. It has nothing to do with your biological sense perceptions. In fact, it's illustrated very clearly by what you see with the Curiosity case, is that mankind's mind can create new artificial sense perceptions. Mankind's mind can create synthetic robotic devices. And mankind's mind can act through these creations, which are not biological creations. They're creations of function of the power of the human mind. So the human mind can act to expand the power of the mind, which is not a biological process, and it does not end when you die. It continues on as a permanent contribution to the potential power of the human species. And so what he's saying now, why he's highlighting the Curiosity landing, and then looking at the Curiosity landing from the standpoint of the defense of Earth, from the question of these comets and asteroid threats, is that if the ultimate question, again, posed to any form of life on this planet, we are fortunately conscious life that can actually take up that challenge. The question, the challenge posed, is will we actually take the proactive measures to ensure the defense and continued survival and progress of the human species? And the Curiosity landing typifies exactly the type of direction that mankind as a whole needs to rally around. You know, the development of the Arctic will be absolutely crucial for this. The United States contribution with the NOAAPA project, developing the West, the whole western region of the continent of North America up into Alaska, into our access to the Arctic, across the Bering Strait, building a tunnel connecting over to Russia. I mean, these all become things that we can put on the table, but it all has to be unified around a conception of the willful self-evolution of the human species, which is what LaRouche is really focused on in the discussions earlier today. We're looking at a point, I mean, he even compared it to Columbus's crossing of the Atlantic and compared it to Cusa's role in initiating that whole process. And he said that what Cusa did in initiating this crossing of the Atlantic Ocean ultimately transformed all of Europe. It forced a cultural evolution, an evolution of the human species to a higher state, something from which it can never revert back from. but an actual permanent evolution of the human species to a qualitatively higher state. He says that we have the what we have the potential to do with this question of the Mars landing, the defense of Earth, the expansion of the power of the human mind in the solar system, and which means the conscious development of the Earth, the conscious development of the Arctic, all these regions of the Earth, as part of the international collaboration, as a new point of reference for the world as a whole, focused on this as the objective, the actual conscious, willful, science-driven advance of the human species, and including all the cultural implications of that, which, again, he was emphasizing today, the development of society where people begin to identify their own existence, not by their biological existence, but by their scientific and creative contributions to the fundamental advance of the human species. And that is definitely what he sees as the potential option for mankind right now, with the collapse of the current system and the motion moving towards this alternative direction of collaboration in progress, science-driven progress, and collaboration in absolutely necessary and vital areas of defense, in defense of the entire planet. That is the option on the table right now that we can take up.
Well, Bill, do you see you recently looked at an actual study by the Council for Productive Forces, I think it's called, whatever the name is.
The Vernadsky Institute.
Oh, okay.
He set them up.
Do you?
Yeah, I can mention. I just want to mention one thing that about what something that Ben said, that this extrasensory role of the robots, you know, that all the scientists refer to it as if it was a person. Often enough, they refer to the robot as a she. It's not an it. And that may seem somewhat funny, but it's not so funny, because what it is, it's not a machine. It's this extrasensory apparatus of the mind of man. And therefore, it's trying to solve problems that have been, you know, capabilities of which have been put there by the scientists, and is indeed the extension of the mind of man. So it's not so strange that it's referred to as a person, because that's what's behind it. On the report, yes, they are very determined. It is very detailed. This is the institute that Vernadsky set up. The Russian contribution to all of these things, including this strategic defense of the Earth, is absolutely essential. While the United States has capabilities that far exceed what Russia can do in that realm, Russia has this tradition, which is this Vernadsky tradition, of investigating the cosmic radiation. He was the leading scientist for over 80 years old, so 60 years during the Tsarist regime and during the Soviet regime. And although he was considered in many respects a dissident, his work lives today. In fact, his work is living today more than it was in his time, because it was more relevant for the future than it was for the past. And therefore, we're just learning it. And this is what people have been looking at, the people who gave the Council for Productive Forces that gave out this strategy.
That's summer, I think.
Yes. These are the followers. These are the disciples, quite consciously, of Vladimir Vernadsky. We knew and we know who these people are. The program is designed for a total revamping of the Arctic region, creating the infrastructure, communications, satellites, rail, transport, water transport, icebreakers, which is a 20-year program for the development of that region, to turn it into really kind of almost a new country of the world, except it's Russia, but it's really that part of Russia that has been there for...
Scandinavia, too, though, Bill. Ulf is on the phone.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Of course, they've always been there, too. And but the Russian side of this is important because of the extent of what they have in terms of the Arctic. And that will that is going to change the whole situation worldwide. And if we can get movement on this collaboration, and remember, the SDI that LaRouche proposed was not accepted during that time, but this type of thing has always maintained an ethereal existence. Putin revived it again when he came to Kennebunkport after 9/11. Unfortunately, although Bush said he would accept this collaboration on what was then the missile defense program, he didn't follow through on that. But that still lives. And what Rogozin said with regard to the strategic defense of the Earth, which the Russian scientists work on very consciously as such, he was quite sincere in doing this. And all that's required at this point is a show of willingness on the part of the United States that they too would be willing to try and set up this kind of a situation in which we could protect our globe. And then it would become a reality.
Well, I'm afraid the time flew by. The time is the past, future, and present. And every minute counts on doing everything people can figure out on that, creating the situation where Obama will be out of office. So I want to thank our discussants today, Ben Denniston, Bill Jones, Ulf Sandmark in Sweden. And this has been the August 18, 2012 LaRue Show. Thank you all, and on to enjoying Curiosity on Mars. Thank you.